Everybody, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me today are certified financial planners, Tony Payne and Tyler Cook. And today we're going to tackle a subject that we get often from people. Do I need a financial advisor? Is this for me? We're going to run through some really important key points for you to remember, and we hope that you'll reach out to us if you have any questions at the end. So moving right into the outline, I want to kind of understand the role of the financial advisor. If you ever wonder what a financial advisor really does beyond just managing investments, let's kind of talk about that.
It's a fun thing we get to do. I've been doing it now almost 20 plus years, Tyler. Yeah, How long have we been doing this?
Yeah.
It's been a fun ride.
Old. You're getting old. When I first came on, I was the old one. Now you're kind of getting old. So it's comforting to know I'm among friends.
I guess that is comforting in a weird way, isn't it? All right. Okay.
The sage. Let's call it sage.
Yeah. I guess between sage. Tyler and I, there's what, 40 some years?
Over.
Now?
Yeah. It's crazy.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey. Well, I think what you said earlier, Tracy, is very poignant to really hone in on that, because everybody needs a financial plan. Whether or not you need a financial planner is the second question. So we can talk about that, because there's pros and cons to all that. And certainly we know a lot of people who are smart enough to do it themselves, but they're also smart enough to realize they probably don't want to do it.
What are the kind, let's kind of unveil for people the kinds of things that we do every day for those that are kind of sitting on the fence. Do I really need to spend the money for a financial advisor? Because I mean, let's face it, the money portion is, and I'm an every person, so I can, attest. In fact, I can tell you, when my kids were in high school, way back in the day, we had somebody come to the high school and offer a seminar. And I remember thinking, this is probably something I should look into. But I was so scared of being hard sold, and I'm so jaded to that technique and that style. I don't want the phone calls. I didn't want to be bothered. I just wanted to learn more about it. So I ended up not pulling the trigger, which, being with this company for 11 years is one of my biggest regrets, not pursuing that conversation. So for anybody out there that's, you're starting out, maybe you just finished your education, you're launching your career, or you're starting a family, and you want to understand more about that. It's a universe. There's so much more to it than just bank accounts, saving, and we would encourage you to kind of at least explore and investigate. And we give people resources for that are complimentary and not scary, which is something I would have valued back in the day. So I want to kind of talk, let's delve into what we do. What do we do every day for people?
Well, one of the big points there too, and to start with, is how do we bill, or how do financial advisors bill? And I know that's one
of those intimidating
parts, because you think about that in that conversation of, how do you get money? Is there a product? Is there a fee, or is there a service? How does that work? And when you think about that, there's so many different ways that can be done, whether there's a fee for a service, a fee for a product, a commission. That's something to really understand. And when you start to understand that, you can start to really separate out, am I paying for a product? Am I paying for a service? And then you can understand the motivation sometimes of the advisor and what's really going to drive maybe some of the advice. What's the scope of what I'm paying for? Is it insurance advice? Is it estate planning advice? Is it financial planning? Or is it just college planning? Or is it just tax preparation? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we get lumped in with financial person or the financial advisor, and there's all these different flavors of financial planning or financial advice out there.
Can I ask a question? I'm not sure that we want to get into this today, but do we want to talk about the compensation methods?
Yeah, I think that's a key distinction.
Because, that's for somebody who's an every person, that's what's the scariest part. Can I afford it?
Yeah, there's really three basic types that are out there. There's commission, which somebody has to sell a product in order to be compensated. More on that in a second. We think that can create some conflicts of interest that might not be there otherwise. There's fee-based, which has a flat fee component along with commissioners at the product sales side. And then there's what we are, which is fee only. And that's what John Sestina was a pioneer of years ago getting started. And the whole message there from the beginning was you should be able to give financial advice without having to sell a product. And years ago, back in the 70s and 80s, that was unheard of.
And products meaning for
life insurance, annuities.
So it's not just like it's not just like bank accounts. Let's talk about what that looks
like. And it's incentive for somebody to sell something where they take a percentage of, right, on the commission side. So the whole mission from day one was, how can you give unbiased advice, reduce conflicts of interest, and still not have to sell a product. And that was the whole distinction, was that was unheard of, you know, 40, 50 years ago. Now you fast forward to where we are today, there's a lot of people that do this, and there's a lot of really solid financial planners. But to Tony's point, how are they compensated?
It's overwhelming. I mean, if you watch, I mean, Muirfield's coming up, right? So it's going to be all over the television. When you're watching sports, or you're watching any kind of television program, you're going to see various types of financial representation. And as somebody who's now in the industry 11 years now, and has a better understanding of things, I sit and I watch these commercials and I think, that's a lie. That's a lie. That's a lie.
It's great marketing.
We'll be careful about what's a lie or
not. I know,
not,
we've got Mr. Compliance sitting here.
Yeah.
I won't give names, but suffice it to say, do your research, understand what your needs are, right, first, and then, boy, have a list of questions, the same list of questions for every company that you meet with.
So going back to the distinction of the three types, so commission, fee-based, fee-only. Fee-only essentially means charging a flat annual fee with no product sales. And so that's reduced conflicts of interest. Of course, there's conflicts of interest with everything you do. Compliance, right? There's always there.
Good man.
It's always
good
there.
Man, very
it's a real
honest.
Thing. It's a real thing. But I think you get the most unbiased or fair take or fair look at your plan if you have an incentive to say, okay, what's best for this person sitting in front of me? The client, obviously, versus I've got a product of shelf or products on a shelf that I need to sell in order to feed my family. Maybe it's not the right thing for that particular person sitting in front of you, but there's the conflict there of trying to make a sale. So nothing wrong with commission. That's a real thing. Commissions are a part of our lives in a lot of different areas. But in the financial world, that's where people tend to be sold something rather than purchase with an educated background. So part of our mission and part of this show for all these years has been to teach people the difference and let them make their own decision.
I've always wanted to ask you this, and I always forget, but somebody will be talking back in the office and I'll think, does it make sense? Does it matter? I know of people who work with different advisors, and they're, when I talk about what we do, they don't understand or they have no working knowledge. And my first response is, well, you're with the wrong firm, because it should be 101, you know, right out of the gate. They should be, it's a partnership. They should be walking you through these things. But does it matter how often you meet every year? Does it matter? Like, not all advisors are proactive in saying, okay, in 6 months, we're going to meet and talk about this, or in 3 months, whatever the formula is, where we do. They bring them in for the first meeting and and then they don't see them again for the whole year. So life, I mean, look at all the life that happens in a year's time.
Well, and this is where it really goes back to the scope of the relationship and who you're working with. What are you doing together? What are you working towards together? When you meet with them the first time, is it just about investments? Is it for college planning? What are you working towards? And when you define that together, that's going to drive what you're paying for, what you're working towards together. And if you know that and you've defined that together, then you can define what you're working towards, what you're paying for. And that really is a big part of the relationship at the beginning, and that'll drive what your meetings are going forward. Are you meeting 4 times a year, 2 times a year? Are you meeting when you get a new job, when you get a bonus at work? Hey, maybe it's just quarterly when the market's changing. You know, when you define what are you working for, what are you working towards, what are you hiring them for? That may drive the scope of the relationship from the very beginning. That's going to drive, what are they doing for you?
So if you're somebody that goes in and says, I just want you to look at my investments. I don't want you to tell me how to spend my money, save my money, adjust my home income. That's a very different scenario than what we provide, but there, you know, it's real. There are people who don't want you to tell them how to spend their money and how to save their money.
Yeah, and there's even different billing methods too of people who charge hourly, financial planners that'll charge an hourly rate, but we don't subscribe to that methodology because we think that promotes the stop-start planning rather than what Tony was talking about with continuous ongoing meetings, at least quarterly, is what we meet at least regularly with that piece. And then every 2 to 3 weeks, we're following up to see, hey, what's going on in your life? The proactive comment you made earlier. That's when you talk about what do we do for clients. It's we really become part of their life, you know, that go-to resource for anything they can think of. Mm-hmm. We've gotten silly questions from, you know, hey, can I buy my wife diamond earrings, to the bigger questions about retirement and insurance.
That one's not like so that. Silly, Tom.
And no, it's, yeah, it's,
and it's
a good
not
one.
Permission. It's not a permission.
It's
set.
Just to say,
it's,
if, can
it's
I spend
literally
this?
People, yeah. People are leaning on you it's a trust issue, right? So they're coming to you to say, I want to make sure I'm not blowing up my plan. Is this something that would work?
Yeah, the trust is a key piece. Obviously, you know, the phrase, right? It's the hardest thing to gain, right? Easiest thing to lose. So over time, that's the key with the continuous process is if you keep showing up, keep following what we're laying out as far as the plan's concerned, you're going to succeed. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be roadblocks and things that come up in the way or different obstacles that get in the way. And that's where we come in to be that calming influence. I mean, look at COVID, look at 2022 with what the Fed did with interest rates, look at tariffs, everything else that crosses people's minds. We've become that calming center for people to, hey, let's bounce an idea off this person and see what they're going to tell me.
What's the craziest thing a client has done that has made you either frustrated or maybe even fire them as a client?
Without going into specifics, but generally speaking, emotions are the big driver. And you can think of emotions around family driving a lot of decisions that had nothing to do with finances. And I'll probably leave your imagination from there. And that can drive a lot. And it's illogical, and it's a lot of things that go in the complete opposite of good financial decisions. And, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, unless the kids are involved. Then it might equal 7 or 8.
Right. The frustrating part, I would say, would be when we find out after the fact of whatever it is. And you're going, hey, why didn't you just call me in advance? We could have talked this through a little bit to see what makes the most sense.
So, that new boat or something?
Yeah, there's boats, there's the planes,
in the
there's
driveway
all sorts of stuff.
Or,
yeah. But I think the key, too, is just knowing that the way we're designed and the way our processes are set up is we want to be involved in those conversations just to shed light on the bigger picture and overlook their shoulder. Our clients are always in charge, right? They're the owner of the team. Our job is the coach to work with them and make sure that everybody else in their financial life is doing what they're saying they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And the fun part of what we get to do and why I get to smile so much from what we do is when you're doing it right, you get to be the yes person. You know, I got this new bonus at work. What do I do with it? You get to do with what you want with it. You're already on track. You're already saving. You're already on track for retirement. You're already saving for the kids. What do you want to do with it? Do you want to save for retirement earlier? Do you want to give more to charity? Do you want to go on another vacation? What do you want to do? Because if you're already doing all the right things and you already are on track, it's extra. And that's when you get to be able to say, it's enough. You're already on track. You're doing it. And that's that piece, not permission, but that you're on track. It's guilt-free. And that's sometimes what people are looking for. Not that discipline, not that miserly maybe, hey, discipline, you know, keep burying it in the sand approach. But you know what? You can enjoy it because you're doing the right things.
Yeah, fantastic. I want to talk about complexity, increasing wealth. So as in every person, I'm overwhelmed by this particular subject, stock options, business taxes, you know, multi-state income, all the things that you talk about every day. So how do people, just if you can give kind of a couple of bullet points, how do people approach that in their financial plan?
So I think,
I think we're talking about high income earners, right?
Yeah, the basics to all of it is being organized. So understanding where things are at and what that actually means. So the tax side implicates or can have implications on the investing piece or vice versa. Same thing with insurance and estate planning and all sorts of different techniques that we implement. We don't lose sight of the bigger picture. So the strategies are there to implement. But what I love about what we do is it's unique for every single person. That's what keeps me excited about this job mm-hmm. is we know the concepts, we know the strategies, but how you implement them for each person is unique.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no real blueprint.
Yeah, checklist.
Blueprint, checklist, yeah, that you could use to say it works for every single person. And that's where it's funny because we work with multi-generational families. So something you might tell the grandparents would be different than the grandkids, for example. Mm-hmm. Or even that example, too, you could say, hey, have family meetings and some of the advice you're giving one person is different than the next, even though they're in a similar stage of their life. So to really put a bigger picture on what we're talking about, the continuous approach, the ongoing process, and just showing up, that's the key. You got to show up. It's like a personal trainer. We can give you all the recommendations, the nutrition plan, what you got to do, but it's a two-way street. You got to lift some weights yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it works best, is when somebody has that mindset that you're like, you know what? It's time to get this. To your point earlier, I wish I didn't wait.
Mm-hmm.
We can come into your life no matter where you are, what stage of life. We've done that from new college grads to, you know, 90-year-olds.
Yeah, there's a cost.
The point is that the plan can work wherever you are. So mm-hmm. it's never too late to do that,
mm-hmm.
but you got to get organized.
But what's the cost of, if you want to, social media is just blowing up with tutorials and this is what you should do with your money. So what are the costs of those DIY mistakes that people make?
I mean,
I can't help but think kind of the point of the show here where we're talking about why would I have a financial advisor? And we led in today with Tyler and I each maybe having 20 years experience here. And what we've seen even, you start with, at the beginning here, the Bush tax cuts and Ag-Terra and the big changes then of even some of those tax changes that were the beginning of a lot of tax shifts then, and then the Obama tax changes, 2008 and 2009, and the healthcare shifts and a lot of changes that were really impactful to people that needed navigation through that and a lot of changes. Then you went through the housing collapse and crisis and a lot of changes in mortgages and how do I apply for this program and people needing some handholding through that. And even through changes then with the other, I'll say, crisis through COVID even, and building, getting some help through with their businesses and changes then, and even the recent tax changes with the Tax Jobs Act. I mean, there's been a lot here. I mean,
I'm just thinking,
just rattling off what comes to mind and the handholding through that without even regarding the stock market and investment changes and the ups and downs there. And you think about, if I didn't have someone over my shoulder and I'm just raising a family, living life, trying to do my career, and let alone if I'm raising or trying to run a business through that, there's a lot there that I have to pay attention to, let alone be on top of if I want to be savvy. That's why I may want to have an advisor, somebody looking over my shoulder, let alone a team of people looking over my shoulder.
And you're kind of leading into my next point, objectivity and accountability. And that's a big one. I mean, we talk a lot about behavioral finance and how you grew up understanding money and the kinds of experiences you had with money. And for my household, for instance, my husband and I grew up in very different environments. he grew up in a very affluent household. I grew up in poverty. So we have a very different approach on how to handle money. So what keeps people on track when they're, I guess, when they're making a financial move or spouses disagree? I mean, oftentimes you guys are marriage counselors when the client is sitting in front of you.
Yeah.
So how do you handle that?
You got to center yourself around the goal. And everybody's going to have different opinions on how you might get
it's
to that
goal.
It's
so emotional, though, the goal.
Oh, that's the hard part. You kind of have to compartmentalize the emotional piece and just place it to the side and focus on, okay, what's really important here? And that's part of our role. Like you said, the marriage counselor, I mean, that's a real thing. Mm-hmm. That's a real thing. So if you can get people on the same page, focused on the end goal, you know, swimming in the right direction, that type of thing, the idea being, there might be different ways to get there, but use us as a resource to guide you on which path we think might be the best way to go.
So there's no right or wrong answer. It's what they can agree.
And if it's a couple scenario, you have to get them to both recognize that and say, okay, what's the real goal here? Where are we trying to go? And a lot of times that'll lead to a conversation. They'll say, Tyler, well, what have you seen work best? And that opens the door to have a very proactive conversation.
So if I were to ask you, of all types of clients, and we have everybody from college age to retired clients that come through the door, what would be the common theme of difficulty people have in their financial planning? If it were a sort of an every person question.
The one I hear all the time is lack of time. I want to get to it. I just don't have the time to do it. Mm-hmm. And so if you get into a process like we have, it's forced in the sense that we're not going to stop following up, right? And that's what a lot of clients pay us for, is to stay on them and to get the process moving, see it to the finish line and move on to the next goal, whatever that might be. So I think it's a huge value add, is just they're committing to it. There's a monetary commitment on there and obviously paying us to do it. So when they get to show up and actually see the, you know, the fruits of their labor or the reward in the long run, that's the exciting part. But the early years is a lot of building the foundation before you can build the house. And so there's some things you got to do to just start right out of the gate, making sure you don't take some missteps.
It's a really good point. It is that awareness that it is something to have to invest in. I mean, it's like your health or your teeth or something else like that, where it's like, okay, maybe I don't have to do this. Like, I could live life. I could just go about my business, and what happens, happens maybe. But if I pay attention to it, and I do, if I'm mindful about it and I pay attention, I do the right things, when I'm 67 or I look back, things are going to be a lot different than if I hadn't done those things. And no one's going to care. No one's going to know the difference. But when I look back, yes, column A versus column B is going to be a lot different. And the only result is I paid attention. I had an advisor. I worked differently.
I've been with the company 11 years. And just from, I spent the first part of my journey floundering and flopping and flipping and trying to learn. And it was part of my existence was before even the internet, kind of aging myself here. But, you know, resources were not there. And upbringing was not there. Influence was not there. So I had to figure it out, much like many of us out there. We have to kind of hit the wall a few times before we go, okay, yeah. I'm not going to do that again.
Yep.
But it would seem to me that the client has to be a receptive, coachable individual.
Absolutely.
Right. And that's how we kind of understand if somebody's going to be a good client or not, and receptive. I think we have a 98% retention rate.
It's high. Yeah.
So, you know, there's a reason the processes that we have, I'm like cheerleading right now, but the processes in place are really hearty and thorough and keep people, you know, on the straight and narrow. Very infrequently, I hear stories that clients are going rogue. You know, they lean on you guys to.
It's just the key, like you said, building the trust, and then they won't be afraid to come ask questions. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times in the early stage too of a relationship, they might be embarrassed from previous mistakes they made in the past and right. things like that. And that's, we're not here to pass judgment on any of that. We're here to just focus on what's next and get you there.
That's
so
a
having
great
that conversation
point.
Is yeah.
That's a great point. I don't know about you guys, but I grew up, I'm part of a whole generation that grew up where you didn't talk about, in fact, I got scolded, almost punished for asking about money. I just was curious, what do we make? What's our annual income? Because I knew how we lived and I wanted to understand more. And I think it was high school and I got scolded for it. And nobody ever taught me how to balance a checkbook. And, you know, nobody ever talked about investments. So literally I was like Bart Simpson sticking my finger in the plug over and over again.
We're in just in the whirlwinds of this coming into just a storm of wealth transfers now of a whole generation where that was a thing, Tracy, where people are transferring wealth in mass, in trillions of dollars for the next 20, 30 years, where parents may not have shared, grandparents may not have mm-hmm. shared, people are coming into wealth that may not know it, or there's wealth that, you know what, they didn't know what to do with it, and it may be a messy situation where there's a lot of people who, you know what, the advisors may have retired or they're not in contact with them, where we're encountering that, where they may be taking over for mom or dad's stuff or inheriting mom or dad's stuff, where, you know what, there's a lot of those situations coming on where no one talked about it, and now they're starting to clean up or try to help mom or dad now, and yeah. maybe mom or dad aren't really all the way there anymore, or they have a diminished capacity too.
Yeah.
So it's a real thing. It's really, yeah, it's
so
really
have the
hitting.
Conversations.
Yeah, have the
Talk
conversations.
Talk to your family.
It's
yeah, that's a whole other show. Why does ongoing planning matter? And that's kind of a good segue, you know, question from what we were just talking about. So when life is throwing you a curveball, you know, like new job, new marriage, unexpected inheritance, why planning matters in those scenarios as opposed to shooting from the hip, you know, your whole life?
Yeah, I think the process would be knowing where you're at today, right? So you're grounded. So when those big life events happen, you can keep the emotions where they need to be and not make any, you know, poor decisions when something like that happens, whether it's a positive thing like winning the lottery or perhaps family passed away. And like you said, an inheritance situation, there's a lot of emotions on either side of that. So one of the best things we can tell people is just to take almost a full year and just pause, reassess where you're at. Yes,
a full year.
Yeah, think about that, because you have to go through the cycle of life. And years is how we all live. But there's just different things that happen throughout the year, whether it's holidays or taxes.
Surprises me.
Well, that's the point, is not to not do anything, but you pause, don't make any big decisions. Yeah. Use that year to plan.
So that's changed from 6 months then. It used to be 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, some people could go faster, right? The year is a good time frame just to reset and see what that next calendar year looks like from prior to that to where you are now.
You think about even the biggest decisions, maybe something like a family lake house or something like that, whether it's some, you know, your antique car or something like that, dad's old something or other.
Right.
Those are the kinds of things maybe for a year to hold the family condo in Florida. Maybe it's things like that that take a year, maybe 6 months, something like that.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
It'll be complicated if there's siblings involved. Maybe somebody who's an only child, it could go quicker too mm-hmm. with those types of things. But mm-hmm. yeah, I've seen that actually very recently with homes and what to do with it. And do you want to keep it in the family? Are we going to move on? So there's those conversations that if you just go hastily into it, you're going to make some bad decisions.
And you talk a lot about behavioral finance, and that's, I mean, everything we're talking about, including my own stories, it's all emotion. Money is all emotion. I mean, it's how you grew up, and this is my opinion. Is this true? It's the way you grew up. It's the things that you witnessed. It's the tutorials that you didn't get or did receive
yeah.
from your family. It's just pure emotion. So it's amazing how when you track, and I can say this because I'm a lot older than you guys are, but you know, when you track your life and you know where you came from, and you tend to make the same mistakes over and over again. You have the same pigheadedness, the same stubbornness, you can rationalize the same decisions about how to spend your money over and over again. And how do you break that? I mean, you guys are trained in behavioral science, behavioral finance. So what can people do to kind of break themselves from hitting the wall repeatedly over and over again because of their own emotion?
That's part of having an advisor. That's part of these little tricks, tips, the ideas of breaking the habits. And it's usually not one big thing. It's not one big thing. Usually it's the little things. And depending upon what habit we're trying to break or which pattern it is that, you know what, if we see it's a cash flow issue, if we see it's
shoes.
You know what, if it's impulsive or compulsive, is it really an issue? I mean, are we not saving for retirement? Are we in debt? You know, there's some things that if it's not an issue and we're hitting all those other marks, enjoy the shoes. Mm-hmm. You know what, if that's something that
you
others
hear that, Jay?
Others might pick up. Yeah, exactly. You know, did you hear that, Jay?
Yeah, I get
so
shoes.
As we say that, though, that's the point to me first is diagnose the issue. If it's we're on track, we're meeting all of our goals, and we are able to treat ourselves and we're hitting the marks great, mm-hmm. there's not an issue there. But if we are not hitting those marks and we're in debt, and we're paying interest on things, or we're not saving for retirement, well then, okay, we need to start maybe forced savings. You know what? We're going to take some money off the top. We're going to put it in retirement. It hits that before it ever hits the credit card or the shoe budget. That's one way to try it. Yeah, exactly. Or the car.
Budget?
Yeah.
No, well, you're not.
Shoe
well, there's different ways to handle this, but yeah. Tyler, I don't know where you'd go with
it. That might have helped me 20 years ago.
I think one good way to break habits, like we talked about, I always use the analogy of a physician. You go in for a checkup and they tell you you've got an issue, whatever it is, high blood pressure, cholesterol, whatever it is. You can't fix the problem right away, but it's what you're going to do to change your behaviors, right? From data. So it has to be a behavioral change. It's not like a diet where there's fads, things like that would help. You've got to commit yourself to making behavioral changes in your life. And when you do that and you start small, just change something with your morning routine.
So you have to get real with people.
Yeah, and this is where, like, we talk about being marriage counselors, but yeah. A lot of other roles that come into play when you're trying to break bad habits mm-hmm. in your example. So if you continue to show up and just do the basics, the fundamentals, center yourself around your goals, then you can look at the fun things in the future. But to Tony's point, if you have all these other issues going on and you're talking about, you know, bigger goals like buying a house or something, but you've got $100,000 in credit card debt, well, we need to reset the mindset on what's important.
How do you set somebody, you know, we're talking about business and personal wealth, those kind of go hand in hand, I've learned by mm-hmm. listening to you talk. So as a business owner, how does somebody balance investing in their company? I have a family member who has an LLC who this is a struggle. So mm-hmm. this is going to be an interesting conversation for me as well. But how do you balance investing in the company and securing personal finance in tandem with that, especially starting out as a business owner?
You diversify.
If you
you have
it depends,
to.
I swear.
No.
That's what you're going to say.
I'm always one for diversify. I mean, the natural part of a business owner is normally I get control over my business. I get to grow my business. It's usually something that motivates you, you're interested in. Normally, every business owner I've met usually thinks they can do better in their own business than letting somebody else run their money. That's normally what I've encountered. Tyler, I don't know if you've seen much different.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that leads to some of the issues you see as well, where there's been studies that show, you know, 90% of somebody's net worth could be their business value, right? And that depends on different entities that or the type of business. But if you focus too much on that, and to your point, ignore the diversification aspect, then all your eggs are in one basket, which could be great. It could also be catastrophic if things don't go as planned.
Is it hard to, as an advisor, to get someone? I mean, let's face it, if you're a business owner, you've got a pretty high drive and you're pretty independent. Is it hard to rein someone in if they're wired to do one thing at a time, as opposed to, for instance, I want to pay all of my debt off before I start saving, or I want to open a new wing of the company before I do this. Is it, as opposed to being diversified in the way they handle things?
So that goes back to what the goal is. So we put our clients' goals first and foremost, and we can talk to them about, okay, if you choose that option to be completely debt-free first, here's what you might be sacrificing on the back end with not investing sooner, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Out the scenarios. Yeah, you lay out the scenarios and the implications and how that impacts other parts of the plan. And ultimately, again, the client makes that decision just like a business owner would.
How do you segueing to inheritance? So especially as a business owner, how do you prepare somebody not just to inherit the wealth, but to handle it responsibly? And we did a show recently on this topic where we talked about first, second generation money history.
Oh, good. Maybe a different direction or different word with it. Instead of inheritance, succession planning. Mm-hmm. So if I'm doing it right, I'm not letting someone inherit it. I'm planning the succession of the business. Because if I'm planning the succession, I'm hopefully grooming someone to take over. I'm picking out who wants to take over, who's involved, who's interested, who's capable, who am I pointing out to say, you know what, the customers, my employees, people involved, I'm going to make sure you know who's going to take over, who's the clear person, you know, they're the fit for this. Mm-hmm. And if there's not a person, who's going to buy this business? Who's going to take over? Maybe I have an insurance policy on myself, or, you know, who's going to take this over and buy it from the kids if there are kids or something like that. And that way I'm not leaving it up to chance for, you know what, this inheritance and, you know, who's going to fight over it or what's this inheritance tax going to be or, you know, who, which one of these, pardon me, idiot kids is going to blow this business up and ruin it. And
that's
these,
where it starts, Tony.
My loyal 30-year employees are going to get ruined because my idiot kids who live in Florida now are just going to ruin it. That's the worst scenario in the world. I don't want that scenario. And if I value my employees and my customers, I want to think about that ahead of time rather than inheritance. I want to plan succession.
Yeah. So I'm sitting here as you guys are talking about this. These are just a few items that fall under financial planning. I want to hit people with some pros and cons of hiring an advisor versus not hiring an advisor. And we don't have to go crazy, but when I ask you, give me the pros and cons, what are the first couple of things that come to your mind? I hit you first.
Well, the pros would be having that other set of eyes overlooking your shoulder. And I'm speaking for us, right? I can't speak in general with all advisors because I think our process is pretty unique and very customized to what, you know, each individual needs. So I think having that resource, just knowing that we're there, phone call away and email away, we're always available. It's not just in the meetings with clients and, you know, we don't charge extra for those things. It's a continuous relationship. And we'd rather people reach out to us every single day than hold something in for a year and not tell us. So we thrive on that communication piece. So that's a huge part of the, if you're doing pros and cons, that's huge. Cons, I don't know. I mean, from the con standpoint, it's one of those things that maybe if there's some advice that's given that's not receptive, or maybe that some conversations that people don't want to hear, mm-hmm. kind of that tough love type scenario, those could get interesting. But I think from, if you're balancing pros and cons, if you can afford it, obviously is a big piece to it. But just knowing you've got that unbiased person in the corner that's going to always put your interest ahead of their own, I think that's critical.
I mean, I'll be blunt. If you're thinking out loud, I would say a con could be the fee, even if you could pay it. Sometimes people view a fee as a con. And if you look at, and I'll, you know, we look into it and would say, if you go into the studies, there's studies that would say the advisor alpha, the fee would be worth it. But that fee, you have to dive in. You have to say, it's worth it if I use the advisor, if I believe in it, if I really go in and say, I'm going to ask the questions, I'm going to listen to the advice. I'm not going to say, you know what, I'm going to hire the advisor, but I'm still going to do my own thing, and I'm still going to maybe not listen or do it my own way and believe it. Okay, then perhaps advice isn't for you, and do it your own way, and that's okay. You know, there are many ways to do this, and mm-hmm. what I've learned in my own career here is, if you have an approach, stick to it. It's those that keep flip-flopping and, you know, every couple of years keep varying their approach, that keep going and losing and paying different fees and go from one approach to a different approach, that keep getting swallowed up in different fees. But when you have one approach and you stick to it, those fees, and you keep sticking to that advice, they seem to be worth it. That advisor alpha stacks up over time, you know, and some of the best advice you get from an advisor isn't always the advice that adds alpha, meaning adds to your return. It's the advice that gets you to stay away from bad decisions, stay away from the deals with extra fees, stay away from the bad things that evaporate, or stay away from when you shouldn't get out of the market, you know, stay the course. It's those kinds of things that if you don't have the advisor, if you're perhaps listening to a machine and you don't have the person to talk to, that's what you don't get when you're not paying the advisor. So even though that fee could be a con sometimes, especially when you see it as a flat dollar amount and you're staring at it right in your face, that's sometimes why it could be worth it, even if it looks like a con.
And you don't have a crystal ball, and this is just a general question. Do you think it's human nature to push against the fee and to constantly be erratic in the way they're handling things because of the fear of paying the fee?
Well, that's Great question.
Mistrust?
Yeah,
like
financial services in general has been turned into a commodity, kind of like insurance, right? How fast can you do it and how cheap can you get it? And that's just not how we're set up, right? There's a fee. It's there for service. It's there for the relationship piece. And there's a cost to it. So we tell people all the time, you've got to be willing and see the value in what you're paying for. Otherwise, it's not going to work.
And be coachable.
Yeah, and we're okay with that, right? It's not for everybody. We understand that.
Right.
And so we want somebody to be excited to pay and say, you know what, this has been great. Let's go. Let's keep rolling. Because we're on annual renewals, right? So everybody's up for renewal every single year. Yeah. So we got to continue to prove ourselves and show up for our clients. And that's I think, what I love about what we do is just showing up every day, making sure that they know that we're here for them. Especially the last 5 years alone, we've had so many opportunities for things that could have gone sideways, but for people coming to us and listening, we've kept them on track, right? And that's very rewarding for us in the back end, is to see them still on track despite all the craziness going on in the world, let alone their own lives. That, you know, that's the key. So that's my final pro. Yeah.
And not to cheerlead, because I'm probably the salesiest person at the company. You guys are all so self-deprecating, but I get excited listening to the conversations and watching what happens from start to finish with our clients. Sometimes you get what you pay for, and you have to be coachable. And I wish I had done it a long time ago. I had an opportunity and I got scared. The sticker shock scared me. The concept of somebody potentially selling me products, you know, that kind of thing. I wasn't savvy about it at all. And it's a different time in my life. So, you know, research it, get to know it. That's the bottom line, you know, ask a lot of questions. So the bottom line is working with an advisor is going to open doors to opportunities. It really does. So that's it for today. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to share with your friends and check us out on YouTube.
Media. Think big.